Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Midwest Hemp Council Weekly Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Dozier. This week's podcast is brought to you by Adams Independent Testing. You can find Adams Independent Testing at www.hempinspection.com. That's www.hempinspection.com, or call them at 888-897-HEMP. That's 888-897-4367. We do appreciate the sponsorship of Adams Independent Testing. On this week's podcast, we're going to talk with Heartland Hemp Cooperative's Michael Morrow and Chad Brandenburg, founder and CEO of Roca Farms in Indiana. Before we start, we do want to remind you about the Hemp at the Crossroads event coming up February 4th and 5th at the Embassy Suites near the Indianapolis Airport in Plainfield, Indiana. With COVID closings and confusion, we certainly do invite you to stay tuned for updates and information. You can also check the website, MidwestHempCouncil.com. Now let's get this podcast started with Heartland Hemp Cooperative's Michael Morrow. Michael, how are you? And thanks for being with us this week.
I'm doing great. How are you, Jason?
Doing fantastic. Michael is also the owner and CEO of Tomorrow Solutions, so we're going to talk about both of those. But first, we're going to talk about your farm in St. Paul, Indiana. You guys are our hemp growers in St. Paul, Indiana?
Correct. We had a license in 2019 to grow. We also have a license for 2020, but we did not decide to grow. With the marketplace a little bit uneasy, we decided to focus on processing.
I'm sure there's a lot of folks that planted in 2019 that maybe if we had not even had COVID, would not have planted in 2020 just to kind of regroup and figure out what they were doing. But was COVID the reason you did not replant in 2020?
No, it didn't play a very big role. And I would have to say, you probably are, you know, aware of this, but, you know, farmers, COVID was not necessarily something that impacted them because their day-to-day operations have to take place no matter what.
Sure. And so what went into holding off then on planning for 2020?
Mostly the excess material that was out in the marketplace. Mm-hmm. I wanted to try to make solutions for that rather than adding on to that problem that we had created from 2019.
Okay. And how has that gone for you here in 2020? What did you guys come up with?
So we've actually been able to produce a lot of white labeling for new retail industry developers. And I think that's really what the industry needs, is just support in infrastructure and development of those retail end good users to really make this a more viable crop and production for farmers.
And if you're not growing your own hemp, where are you getting it from for your products?
I'm actually sourcing it from 100% from Indiana farmers that had excess material from 2019.
Oh, fantastic. Fantastic. I'm sure that made a lot of those farmers happy, finally able to to have
Correct.
Somewhere to put their product there after growing it. So again, that's Tomorrow Solutions. Was Tomorrow Solutions founded in 2020?
No, it was 2019. Well, October officially, but we started our first processing in November 2019.
Okay, and before we move on to other items there, what are some of the goals there for Tomorrow Solutions and some of the expectations here coming out of 2020 into 2021?
Well, the biggest thing that we continue to develop is the retail infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I want to continue to do is support that through and through. And so that's really what we've decided to do, is be an infrastructure piece for Indiana. And we've really given the promise to people as a company not to go into the retail space, really provide that infrastructure piece. So we're still developing that, but we're just so happy and glad that we got through our organic certification. So we are now officially organically certified through EcoCert.
Oh, okay. And what does that do for you? What does that allow you to do, having that certification?
Well, one of the things that we really pride ourselves on is how we process. We don't use harmful solvents like CO2 or ethanol or anything like that to extract the CBD oil out of it. We actually use an infusion process that takes the carrier oil, that's the end product that the CBD oil will go into, and actually infuse the oil in that using no solvents at all. Mm-hmm. So with this solventless process, we're really able to maintain that plant integrity, but really just give a really clean quality final product to our end users. And our organic certification was a breeze because of the basically lack of additives we have in during our processing.
Mm-hmm. So, so some folks are growing their own hemp. They're trying to do their own processing. You guys are working with farmers, building some relationships out there with farmers, but you're specifically staying in Indiana.
Correct. As of now, I mean, that was my backbone, coming into the hemp industry, is that I actually helped create the Hoosier Harvest Market. It's a nonprofit cooperative out of Greenfield. Really got to know a lot of farmers and a lot of initiatives that farmers care about. And I wanted to continue to support that as I developed my businesses, and not forgetting those roots.
Mm-hmm. Now talk about the farm itself, maybe not even hemp related. How long have you guys had the farm, and what did you do on that farm before 2019?
Well, that's the really great thing about the situation. You know, I met my wife in grad school at Purdue, and it's actually her family farm. It's roughly about 200 acres of different row crops, but we specialized in doing pastured poultry and pastured veal, rose veal.
Oh, okay. And is that something?
Try to find niche markets for our goods, and try to do off the farm sales to wholesale marketplaces.
And obviously, you're still doing that.
On the veal side, we are. We took a step back from the poultry side. Most of our contracts were restaurant contracts with the poultry side. So that kind of didn't fit in with the business model as we moved forward. And that was one of the things that was impacted a little bit by COVID.
I was going to say, you mentioned that a lot of the hemp farmers weren't really impacted by COVID, but on the other side of the farm there, you certainly were.
Correct. And, you know, that's I kind of was looking at it from the different perspective on like my personal side of life. And, mm-hmm. and you know, that's the side I kind of answered with. But yeah, on the other side there, of course, I could definitely feel the pain on that side.
Well, talk about, Michael, how you got into the hemp industry in the first place. What attracted you? Was there a particular person that pulled you in? Was it did you seek out the information? How did you get involved with your farm in the hemp industry?
Well, my involvement had been previous to me starting the hemp side of the farm. I'd been involved with the Midwest Hemp Council and INHIA before that, and really pushing the legislative side and really meeting people like Jamie Petty Campbell and Marty Mahan had really introduced me to a kind of a different side of the different organization connections. That really made kind of pushed me and made me more involved and more passionate in advocating for it. So that's really where my background comes from and getting involved in this. But, you know, I've always been have a service mindset to me. I mean, right out of high school, I went into the military and joined the Army. You know, that service mindset's kind of transitioned through my career path in life. And I found a kind of a good fit here. In the co-op world and really organizational strength between different organizations.
And of course, people that know Jamie Campbell Petty know that she basically is the backbone of the Midwest Hemp Council and really the safety net for a lot of hemp farmers here in the Midwest. But Marty Mahan, I haven't talked to Marty in a long time, haven't seen him because of the shutdowns and things, but Marty's a great guy and a very, very, very heavily active in the hemp community as well.
Oh, yes. And that's one of the things that, you know, we both kind of pushed each other over the last couple of years to really form this co-op and really achieve our goal of bringing this as an industry and infrastructure piece to Indiana to solve a lot of the problems that we saw in 2019.
Okay. And again, Michael, you are the vice president of Heartland Hemp Cooperative. So let's segue right into that. Talk about what
Sure.
Heartland Hemp Cooperative is all about. Obviously, Marty is involved in that as well. So how did that get put together and what are some of the goals for the Heartland Hemp Cooperative?
Well, like everything that is good in life, there's been a lot of iterations of it that have failed. And so I think that's the biggest thing that I want to pinpoint, is that we've continued to try to make this work, and there's been passion behind it the whole way, and the people that we mentioned before and countless other people have been adding to this along the way. And so, you know, first and foremost, Marty and I would not even be in the place we're at right now without countless other people, and that might take the rest of our time. but to really pin it down, you know, what we really want to do is we want to gain that trust back from the farmer in this type of crop, in the style of crop of fiber hemp, because it is something that can be implemented on farms right now. Most farmers out there have the equipment to utilize to be able to produce this crop. And we're really anxious to see what we can do by shaping and standardizing the marketplace.
And what are some of the, how are you doing that? What are some of the things you'll be doing in order to achieve those goals?
Well, one of the things that we've really done is we've really been in strong communication with Don Robinson and Teresa up there at the state chemist's office. That's the sounding board we use 9 times out of 10 on which path to take. Of course, they're not advising on any business business plans or anything, but you know, on regulation and stuff. And one of the things we got back from them recently is that we could, even if things don't really work out in 2021 for us to have a full-fledged crop and fully-fledged rollout of what we want to do, because what we are planning on is making sure that everything is in place and thought through at least before we even start opening the door. So, for instance, number one and first and foremost, we will have funding to pay farmers for their production at the end of 2021 if it meets the standards of the co-op. That is first and foremost the one thing that we will not move forward without.
So, and again, and to reiterate then, what you're saying is the farmers would have a place to sell their crops.
Correct. Processor in place or not, that is part of the plan. And of course, you know, the other part of the plan is having the processor piece. And of course, we can't move forward without that. So those are tied closely together. But we want to ensure farmers that come into this co-op and put their trust in us, that at least the first year, they know that they're going to be paid back for the effort that they put in.
And how much money do you think that will take? What kind of resources will that take to guarantee that?
Numbers are always constantly changing right now because of the increase in the production of new equipment out in the marketplace. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing that we're dealing with right now is just the selection of our final product, of our final processor. We have a strong research background in looking at different pieces of equipment, and we have a couple that have boiled to the top of the list. And when we put those into the number cruncher, that ends up being anywhere between $500,000 to $1 million in initial investments to get us off the ground and running in a direction we feel comfortable.
And do you feel comfortable that you will meet that goal?
At this point in time, it's kind of two different worlds. I'm the eternal optimist and Marty is more on the pessimistic side, but I would have to say that I really feel strongly that we will have all of our funding secure by the beginning of May and all of our membership in line by the beginning of May to produce a good crop for 2021 that will meet our standards for processing. I feel strongly that we've done the things that we've needed to do to make this happen. Now, of course, there's many different hurdles along the way, but again, like I was saying, we work closely with the state chemist office, and even if things don't go exactly the way we want to go, we're still going to be pushing forward on research. They've allowed us to have a maximum of 5 acres for research, and we're still going to be performing the efficiencies of genetics, the efficiencies of harvest, the efficiencies of processing in 2021. It's just how robust that will be will be dependent on, you know, again, that initial infrastructure and investment.
And if you meet your goals on that investment and you get the equipment that you feel you need, how many tons of biomass or how much hemp would you be able to process do you anticipate in 2021 or 2022?
So that's a very good question. So a lot of the variables that are set in place for that ends up being one of two things. One, how efficient we are in learning to be good processors because of we will have, of course, maybe some expert training from the people that we buy it from. But of course, you always have to work out the kinks in the beginning.
Sure.
And so I really don't want to commit to a massive amount of poundage, but we could see, you know, upwards of, you know, 60 ton to 100 ton processed.
Ah, fantastic. And how would that, I guess, percentage-wise, would that take care of a majority of hemp farmers in Indiana? How many, I mean, obviously they all would not be coming to you, but I don't know if there's a way to answer that question of how many farmers that could take care of, or, you know, would that almost guarantee that any farmer that did meet the requirements as far as their production, their crop production, would have a place to sell?
Well, and it kind of look at it from the numbers perspective, you know, you expect around 2.5 ton off an acre, you know, an average. And so, you know, you divide the 100 by that, that's what doesn't end up being a whole lot of acreage. You know, 25, is that?
You're talking to the wrong guy when you're talking math.
Yeah, I'm trying to do math on the top of my head, too. Maybe 40-ish acres. I'm going to pull up my calculator right now so we can just have this decided.
There we go.
Yeah, 40 acres. That was that. I should have just went with my first guess. So 40 acres would be what we would need to get started to get to that poundage. Now that is just, that's very, 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 very conservative number, because for us to be viable, we'll have to be producing a lot more than that every year.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this is, you know, I believe in the crawl, walk, run method.
Sure.
I heeded a lot of the warnings, you know, from the different organizations like the Midwest Hemp Council, when we first got started in our hemp processor and hemp growing. We started with 3 acres. We went with a sound processor that that wasn't a multi-million dollar processor, that needed, you know, thousands of pounds to be efficient. You know, that's what we're going to do with Heartland Hemp. You know, we're going to put pieces in place as the industry grows, but we're going to hopefully be helping create those standards as the industry grows here in the Midwest and outside in other regions.
Well, that's fantastic. And the reason I keep drilling down here and beating this bush is because almost weekly, one of the lines that come out of almost all of our guests is that farmers, you know, the biggest problem is they still have product, you know, sitting in their farm or sitting in the barns, or, you know, a product from 2019 even still sitting with nowhere to sell it. So if they're guaranteed a place to sell it, again, assuming they meet the requirements, that would certainly be a game changer here in Indiana and the Midwest.
Well, you got to look at where we're sitting at here in the Midwest. We have done industrial ag before. It's not a complicated beast to slay. The thing you have to do is make sure, just like every other corn and soybean producer, they know what moisture content, they know what you know, time to do different things during the year. That's all we need to do to put in place, and we need to filter out the people that are not adhering to standards.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I really believe that, and I think once that happens, the industry will start to develop in the way it needs to.
All right. Michael Morrow, Vice President of Heartland Hemp Cooperative. Michael is also the owner and CEO of Tomorrow Solutions, a farm in St. Paul, Indiana. Michael, anything else here that we need to hit? I have some fascinating information here. Really appreciate it. Anything else that we need to talk about that we haven't hit on?
Well, one thing that Marty and I have worked hard on is developing a presence on online, mm-hmm. and we're not very good at it. And we'd love anybody that wants to join the co-op to help us do that. We'd love that. But you can find us at www.heartlandhemp.coop.
Heartlandhemp.coop.
Correct.
So there's no .org, not .com. They actually have a .coop.
Yeah, you have to be registered with the state and everything, but yeah, we did all the steps to get there. Like I said, we're not the best at it, but
right.
But we got there, and we'd really love some support on that. And we do have, you know, the of course the social media pages, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, but you know, we'd really love getting feedback on that website, because Marty and I sit there on a, you know, every other day and go through those messages and contact people personally,
right,
to answer their questions.
So anybody in the web industry out there that may want to be involved in the hemp industry as well, they should probably get in touch with you, and maybe they could help you out a little bit there.
You know, I think we could find some benefits on both sides.
There we go. Fantastic. Once again, Michael Morrow. Michael, it's been a great conversation. We're going to have you back on here and get some updates from the Heartland Hemp Cooperative. And again, we do appreciate it and hope to talk to you soon.
Thank you much, Jason. Have a great day.
All right, we turn our attention to Chad Brandenburg. Chad is the founder and CEO of Roca Hemp. Chad, how you doing today?
I'm great, Jason. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Appreciate you coming on the program with us. I wish we could have talked to you a little earlier. Last month, you were the sponsor of the Midwest Hemp Council podcast, and we certainly do appreciate that and all your efforts that have gone into the hemp industry here in Indiana, the Midwest, and beyond.
Well, thank you. It was a crazy time, harvest and everything else, getting things out of the ground and Thanksgiving. So no problem at all. I appreciate it.
So did you go against the all odds and have a Thanksgiving, or did you taper it down a little bit this year?
I was definitely tapered down. Just my family and that's about it.
There you go. At least that's what we're sticking to anyway.
Yeah, genuinely, it was the easiest cooking I've had to do in a long time for Thanksgiving. Normally, we have about 30 people.
Right. That is true. And with us, the same way. It was less people. It's like, wait a minute. The stress level was not even close to what it was before or whatever. So, you know, I guess you take the good with the bad if there is such a thing. But at any rate, Chad, we wanted to get you on here, of course, to talk hemp. So let's talk about that. Again, Roca Hemp. Let's start with that. Tell us what Roca Hemp is all about, what you guys do, and why people need to know about you.
Absolutely. Well, thank you. So Roca Hemp, there's really three legs to the stool, if you will. We are primarily or predominantly to begin with a hemp genetics company. So we partner with breeders across the country to find the best genetics we can find to grow in Indiana and the Midwest. Not every area, not every part of the country can successfully grow the same strains. So we really diligently look for things that will grow in Indiana and the Midwest well, partner with those breeders and bring those genetics in, provide them to farmers that are around here, mm-hmm. and then kind of melding to the second leg of the stool. we did grows for ourselves, and then we ran grows for other farmers here in the state and supplied genetics to them for those purposes. So they hired us to run the grow, to mm-hmm. plant, to plow the fields, to plant, to, you know, weed, do all those things, and then help harvest and everything on the other end. And then the fruits of those labors, so some of the farmers and our products are our own biomass and plants, et cetera. We have turned those to oil and have a finished good line, a line of finished goods coming out mm-hmm. under Roca Wellness.
Oh, okay.
So everything from tinctures, gummies, there's lotions, bath bomb, roll-on gels, pain cream, there's pet life. So kind of going across the gamut with the items there. So,
well, let's break those three legs down then, and let's start with the first one. Finding sure. the strains that work here in Indiana. Where did you have to go to find those strains, and how did that process work? What went into deciding that situation, and how did all that happen?
Well, first it's getting to the actual breeder. I don't want to work with a broker. I don't want to work with somebody that's in between. Mm-hmm. They're going to tell you whatever you want to hear. And that's not what I'm looking for. I really want to get to the true grit. So in situations where we can find and interact directly with the breeder is where we start. Mm-hmm. And then talk to them about where those particular strains have been grown, what the success was, if it's anywhere in the parallel that would apply to the Midwest. Obviously we start digging. A lot of them have not done it in the Midwest. Some of them have skipped from the West Coast over to the Carolinas mm-hmm. and, you know, down. So, you know, really it's a difficult process. Mm-hmm. A lot of the folks that we talked to, it just wasn't worth the risk to do that. So this last year we had a couple of strains that we liked. One of them was Eclipse. It was about, well, there were some people that were very successful with it and some folks it went hot on. And, mm-hmm. It was definitely not what we're looking for. Mm-hmm. But, we're continuing the diligence with our breeders and continuing to drive at getting the right product. We have a couple this year that we're really excited about. It's a combination of THC strains that are familiar and then have gone through the breeding process of the last 5 to 7 years mm-hmm. of getting them down to something that is CBD worthy, low THC, and, you know, CBD not incredibly high in the range, you know, 16-18%, mm-hmm. that tends to drive the THC components up. And that's where you start getting into trouble. So this is more in the 8-10-12 range as far as total cannabinoids, an incredible flower profile, and something that we feel is a lot safer for farmers. And it's that strain in particular is Bubba Kush. So that's something that everybody knows from the THC side of the world. Mm-hmm, and it's something that, you know, we've grown this last year privately, just us trying to test things. And then, you know, we'll have it ready hopefully for spring. But there's a couple more like that that are known brands that have been bred specifically to grow in the industrial hemp space.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's what makes the agriculture side of things makes it tough, because when you're dealing with, if you're creating a product, you're creating a widget, you can create that widget, you can adjust it, you can do what needs to be done, you can continuously put effort and time and create new ones. When you're talking agriculture and we're talking hemp, you get one, you know, you get a crop, you got to wait for that crop to mature. You've got to cut it. You've got to harvest it. And then you've got to see what you've got. And then so you've got to start again the next year. So research, development, it is a long, tedious process. So, you know, hats off to you guys
really
for going through all that and doing the research and trying to find the right strains and things. And that's got to be, I know, frustrating at times. But when you hit it right, of course, it's got to be a good feeling.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, we went to the point of testing the water, testing the soil before anything was ever planted to understand what kind of environment the plants were going into. Did some soil tests in between veg and flower to see what had been removed from the soil by the plant, you know, if there's any sort of amendments and things that needed to be done. Mm-hmm. And then obviously started testing early in flower, you know, around week two. That set our baseline, and then tested weekly on the same day every week after that, trying mm-hmm. to make sure that we didn't exceed the threshold of 0.3%.
And of course, the testing, the experimentation, it never ends. It's just ongoing, I'm sure. But we move from finding the right strains and finding the right plants to now you mentioned running the grow, or, you know, run the grow with the harvest,
sure.
That sort of thing. Explain that, what that's all about, and how you guys handle sure. that side of it.
Sure. So we grew a lot of the mother plants for the clones that we produced this year in about a 1 acre greenhouse. so once we had finished with the cloning process, we moved those plants into flower production, excuse me. And that flower production was for our own, you know, our own benefit. You know, lesson learned there, we kept too many plants in the greenhouse, because we were pretty densely populated for the mothers for clones, anticipating, you know, fairly large scale production. Mm-hmm. COVID had a lot to say about that, unfortunately.
Right.
But instead of spreading the plants out the way we should have, you know, decreasing the amount in the greenhouse, maybe spreading some outside, doing some other things, we left them all in there and just tried to deal with it. Everything on the outside was great. Everything inside was really thin. And, you know, we started to have some challenges with pests and disease and things. Mm-hmm. We took care of it, but it definitely decreased the overall product benefit at the end.
Sure.
So, you know, lessons learned, that was for us specifically. So, you know, we grew indoors for ourselves in a greenhouse. We had two farms hire us to actually run their grow from start to finish. We did that successfully. You know, the crops were very good considering the timing and things like that that went in. There was one that was in southern Indiana that was about 6 acres, and one up north of metro Indy, if you will. Mm-hmm. And it was about 15 acres. So, you know, altogether, those were two very challenging things, but a lot of fun. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, we learned some things we did extremely well, some things we didn't do so well. And, you know, that's kind of the name of the game here.
Well, I don't know anybody in the industry that will admit that or suggest that they did everything perfectly the last couple of years.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's part of the challenge right now. It's a, you know, it's a young industry, if you will, and there's not been, you know, 80 to 100 years of trials and tribulations and innovation and things like that to really kind of curb some of those peaks and valleys of good decisions. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're out there doing the best we can every day and, you know, trying to take care of everybody along the way. It's a lot of fun, but I'm glad all the plants are in, everything is bucked, and we're moving down the sales side of things.
Fantastic. So. Now, again, as we continue on, then you discuss the biomass, the plants that you're turning into oil for Roca Wellness. And by the way, right. One more time to reiterate, folks can get in touch with you at rocahemp.com. That's R-O-K-A hemp.com, rocahemp.com for any of this information. But now let's talk about the other side of it here, the production side of the oil,
sure.
Those products, the tinctures, the gummies, things like that. You're just starting that now this year, or how long has this been in the process?
Yeah, we wanted to use as much of our own product as we could. Obviously, you know, at some point we're going to run out.
Sure.
So, you know, we've partnered with a local extractor. You know, things are going really well there. There's a lot of innovation and, you know, we get together to have our R&D meetings and, okay, what can we do differently? How can we, you know, produce the highest quality, keep the price as low as we can and still have something that's not, you know, there's a lot of that placebo conversation going on with CBD oil and things in the industry. How much of it is actual potency and actually, you know, doing the work, the medical benefits, how much of it is placebo? I don't want that to be a question when people are using our products.
Sure.
So the focus is definitely on, you know, what can we do to make it as potent and as forceful, but yet gentle, right? It's not meant to be, you know, something where you're like, oh gosh, I have to take this again, mm-hmm. but it's, you know, hey, this really helps me. It relieves, you know, my issues. So, you know, a lot of time has been spent, we use full spectrum distillate. So we're not using isolate. We're not using other things that might create a lesser experience. There certainly is a benefit to broad spectrum oil for people that can have absolutely no THC. They get tested at work. Mm-hmm. You know, they have some things going along that way.
Sure.
So we do a nano infusion process that takes it basically from parts per million to parts per billion, which increases the bioavailability of the oil into your receptors in your body. So that's, you know, a focus and one of the things that we're doing that way. No preservatives, non-GMO. I mean, all the things that make it clean and healthy for you to put into your body, no pesticides.
Is the product available to the public yet, or is it still in the process of being packaged and put together?
We are at the final packaging stage right now. So, you know, I'm sending samples out to interested groups. I was actually just on the phone with a group in Europe right before I talked to you. And they're interested in having this line support, you know, their business treatment for anxiety, depression, things like that. So, you know, we're making inroads anywhere and everywhere we can. You know, image and logo and everything's done. We're getting final packaging and we'll be off to the races. So
now, of course, in the United States, we right here in Indiana on this program, we've talked to a lot of different folks with in the business of tinctures, gummies, things like that. But it's interesting that you talk about overseas. What's the competition like overseas? Is it more established over there? What do you have to do to get into that market?
It's really not any more established. I mean, they're still dealing with a lot of the fledgling supply chain issues we are. it's a matter of finding the right group that's interested. You have to have the willing recipient on the other side and, you know, jump through the hoops over here as far as shipment goes and, mm-hmm. and all of that kind of thing. You can't just send it to send it or, you know, what have you. You have to be in cooperation with the company over there.
Right.
So,
are there issues with shipping, that sort of thing? Again, in the United States, we're still having trouble with truckers being able to take it from one state to another. So taking it across the ocean, is that a problem into other countries?
We're just navigating that right now. So Jason, I certainly hope not.
Verdict's still out, huh?
Yeah. So they actually, so this particular company is in London and they have a different federal limit. So they're 0.2 where we're 0.3.
Oh.
So, you know, flour and things like that, if and when that becomes a reasonable effort, is going to be even more stringent on our growers. You know, from a an extraction process, we can decrease the limit, the potency during the extraction process to make sure that we're compliant with their rules. But you know, there's lots of little details to catch as we're going through this process.
I can only imagine. I can only imagine. And again, we're speaking with Chad Brandenburg. Chad is the founder and CEO of Roca Hemp, and you can find Roca Hemp at www.rokahemp, and that's rokahemp.com. Chad, is there anywhere else that folks can get in touch with you, reach you, any other websites that they need to be aware of?
Right now, as far as the hemp side of the world, you just gave it to them. Mm-hmm. My contact information is out there. An email that's easy is info@rokahemp.com. That will get to me, and we can go through and set up any kind of programs, samples, you know, anything we need to do along those lines. Really trying to zero in our approach to finished goods to the true function of the cannabinoids, right? Mm-hmm. So it's mm-hmm. not just a buckshot kind of a, hey, here's a full spectrum oil.
Right.
Yes, it is. But what do the individual cannabinoids do and how do they best interact with each other and what's the result of that interaction and how can that help people, right? So we're really narrowing down a lot of our focus. So it's more rifle shot than it is buckshot.
There you go. Fantastic. Chad, anything else that we need to hit on that we did not hit on so far?
At this point, we do have a drying trailer that I developed with a company out of Florida to be able to dry flower primarily. That's not something we can sell in the state of Indiana today, but it is something we can sell outside of the state of Indiana. Mm-hmm. So the trailer is set up. It's a mobile 53-foot reefer trailer that we can park on the farmer's lot. They can rent that piece of equipment like you would rent a backhoe or a tractor or whatever. It's not a tolling situation, so it's more beneficial to the farmer, and they can dry their material right on their property. Hmm. So it's a computerized trailer. You load the, it was designed for flower, but you can load basic biomass in there as well. It was not originally intended to dry, you know, whole plants. So, you know, the focus was on flower at the time, but
right.
You load it full. It measures the relative humidity of the product that's inside of the trailer. And then you tell it to what percentage you want it dried to. It'll give you an estimated number of days to do that. And then you close the doors and you can monitor everything from an app on your phone.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah,
Modern technology. You got to love it in the agriculture business.
It's great. So we have the test product, the test trailer is here. We've been using it lately. It just got up here about 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago. So we're working with it at this point. It'll be something ready for 2021. There will be six of them available for, you know, around Indiana or Midwest or, you know, wherever we can find the business for that. But it's something that should give farmers a sense of safety in that they're loading the product in, they're locking the trailer, and, you know, it's right there on their property. And also, you know, being able to utilize that kind of technology right at home. So they're not having to transport. It takes a lot of the aches and pains away from the process. So
there we go. Anybody interested in this? Again, rokahemp.com, rokahemp.com. Chad Brandenburg. Chad, it's been a pleasure. Some great information. And we want to get some updates from you here as we get into the spring and summer next year and see how things are going and find out what's happening with Roca Hemp.
Absolutely. I'd be happy to do that. Thank you, Jason.
Thank you so much. You have a great day, Chad.
You as well.
All right, great. And that's going to do it for this week's show. This week's podcast is brought to you by Adams Independent Testing. You can find Adams Independent Testing at www.hempinspection.com. That's www.hempinspection.com or call 888-897-HEMP. That's 888-897-4367. If you'd like more information about the Midwest Hemp Council, please go to our website, MidwestHempCouncil.com, and find out how you can get involved, volunteer, and become a member. Thanks again for tuning in, and remember to tell a friend about the Midwest Hemp Council Weekly Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Dozier. We'll see you next time. So long, everybody.